and also give some overview of the entire work, like a matrix, or some kind of framework for the book. So that's what we'll do today, and maybe read the introduction also. So I'm reading from the preface. The Krishna consciousness movement is conducted under the supervision of Srila Rupa Goswami. The Gaudiya Vaishnavas, or Bengali Vaishnavas, are mostly followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of whom the six Goswamis of Vrindavan are direct disciples. Therefore, Srila Narottam Das Thakur has sung, Rupa Raghunatha Pade Hoibe Akuti Kabe Hama Bhujabo Se Yugala Piriti. When I am eager to understand the literature given by the Goswamis, then I shall be able to understand the transcendental loving affairs of Radha and Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in order to bestow upon human society the benediction of the science of Krishna. The most exalted of all the activities of Lord Krishna are his pastimes of conjugal love with the gopis. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in the mood of Srimati Radharani, the best of the gopis. Therefore, to understand the mission of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and follow in his footsteps, one must very seriously follow in the footsteps of the six Goswamis, Sri Rupa, Sanatan, Bhatta Raghunath, Sri Jiva Gopala Bhatta, and Dasa Raghunath. Sri Rupa Goswami was the leader of all the Goswamis, and to guide our activities, he gave us this Upadesh Amrita, the nectar of instruction to follow. As Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left behind him the 8 verses known as Shikshashtaka, Rupa Goswami gave us Upadeshamrita so that we may become pure Vaishnavas. Prabhupada begins by saying that our movement is conducted under the supervision of Srila Rupa Goswami. So he's our main acharya, disciple of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not leave any books, did not write books himself, so he empowered Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Goswami, and some others to do that for him. So they were empowered by him to write these books. And Srila Rupa Goswami looked very similar to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. He was very, very beautiful with lotus eyes. So he's like expanding the energy, the literary energy of Lord Chaitanya. And this book is it's a summary of the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And as we know, there's only 11 verses in the whole book. But each verse is very deep and very important. And each verse leads us, the book leads us very quickly through all of the stages of bhakti, up to the highest level. We can see the first book verse is describing just controlling the senses. And then the last verse is talking about living at Radha Kund in a spiritual body and following in the footsteps of the gopis. So there's quite a big gap in between those two. So we can see that the book itself, it covers a big area, it covers the practice of devotional service from the very beginning to the very end. And although Rupa Goswami wrote Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu much later, and that's his main work, his most important work, and Usually it's beneficial to study Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu first before you look at this book, because this book is just a concentration, a synopsis of a lot of which is given in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It can be done this way also. Because if you already know all the terminology, sadhana bhakti, raganuga sadhana, bhava bhakti, prema bhakti, nishta, ruchi, asakti, all of these things, then it's helpful. Because all of these verses, they represent these various stages. And I'll be mentioning them during the classes. And usually in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu or the Nectar Devotion classes, we go into more detail of what those things are. So if I mention Sanskrit terms that you're not familiar with, then just raise your hand and I'll give you a brief explanation of what it is. But probably we won't have so much time to get into all of the details of all of those steps or the terminology. So Rupa Goswami was born in the year 1489. And he left this world in 1564. So he lived for 75 years. A very full and fruitful life. He hails from a very high-class Saraswati Brahmin family from Karnataka. His great-grandfather, Padmanabha, however, moved from South India, Karnataka, to Bengal, and in a place called Bakla Chandradweep in Bengal. This is where Rupa Goswami appeared in this world. Then his grandfather's name was Mukunda. He lived there. His father's name was Kumar Dev, and his mother's name was Revati Devi. And he had four brothers and one sister. Two of the brothers you know quite well. That's Sanatana Goswami, and another brother who later became known as Anupama. There are some biographers who say their names were Amar and Santosh. Rupa was Amar and Sanatana was Santosh, which stands to reason. They wouldn't have Muslim names, Dabir Khas and Sakar Malik. Their parents certainly wouldn't give them Muslim names. Of course, they were called that later when they were working for the Nawabs Hussein Shah. So then they adopted these Muslim titles. Anupama was originally Vallabh. There was two more brothers, which are not mentioned anywhere, as far as I've read, and then a sister, which is mentioned, the wife of, anyway, I forget it, from in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, she's mentioned. The wife of Srikanta. So all these brothers grew up in Bakla Chandradweep, and they were absorbed in Bhava Bhakti from a very early time, from their childhood. In the forest near their home, which was filled with tamal and kadamba trees, they played and enacted Krishna Leela. And in that little forest, there were two ponds. And so the brothers named those two ponds Shamakund and Radhakund. And they were absorbed in Krishna consciousness from their early childhood. And then gradually they grew up. Uh, um, Rupa Goswami actually wrote some books about Krishna consciousness even before he met Lord Chaitanya. That was one of them was Hamsadutta. I don't know if any of you have ever seen this, but it's quite a esoteric and lofty presentation of Radharani feeling separation from Krishna. And gradually, these brothers became quite well known as scholars and great Vaishnavas, even before they met Lord Chaitanya. And actually, they were writing letters to Mahaprabhu as he was staying in Puri. So there was some correspondence already. Gradually, during that time, in India, there were some states which were controlled by the Muslim or ruled by Muslim leaders, and Bengal was one such state. Nawab Hussein Shah was in charge, and he threatened to wreak havoc in the Brahmin community. In other words, he threatened to kill all the Brahmins and Vaishnavas. The reason for that was because he wanted Amar and Santosh, or Rupa and Sanatan, to come and work for them, for him, and be part of his government, because they were so popular with the people, and they were so intelligent, that he thought that if they were in his regime, then he would be able to control the people. So he suggested that, you know, they join his group. If not, he would cause some trouble amongst the Vaishnavas. And they knew very well what that meant. And so out of fear, not for their own lives, but for the Brahmins and Vaishnavas, they decided to surrender to his proposal. And they became the prime minister and the finance minister of Bengal. And actually at that time in the world, India was the wealthiest country and most sought after by many travelers from Europe. People were trying to come to India for silk, gold, spices, and knowledge of different things, mystics, mathematics, architecture, different things. So, and of all the states in India, Bengal was the wealthiest, believe it or not, at that time. And so, actually, Rupa and Sanatan, they were probably one of the richest men in the world, because they were the prime minister and the finance minister of the wealthiest state in India, which was the wealthiest country. But all of it was under Hussein Shah, who is a big demon. He was not any ordinary demon. Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions in his Navadvipa Mahatmya that he was an incarnation of Jarasandha. So he was quite a terrible demon, quite willing and ready to kill all the Vaishnavas. So Rupa and Sanatan, they thought it was wise to appease him and work for him. And so they moved from Bhaktachandradweep to Ramakeli, which was the headquarters of Bengal at that time. And they began their service for him and the government. And being taken away from, you know, the beautiful setting of Bengal or Bhaktachandradweep, and being in the state capital with all of the Muslim rulers and ministers and so forth. So in order to help them tolerate the situation, they built, because of they had so much money, they built a Gupta Vrindavan in Ramakeli, which is still there. It's actually one of the remaining sites in Ramakeli. They had Govardhan Hill and Jamuna and So many beautiful things, forests. And they would go there regularly and chant and do Harikatha and just absorb themselves in Krishna consciousness and forget about their official business with the Nawab so that they can absorb themselves and relax. So in Ramakeli, they studied under the brother of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Vidya Vichaspati, who taught them Sanskrit and Persian, Arabic, and some other local languages they needed to know for their work. So they were great scholars. They learned all of these languages. Then gradually, when Rupa was 25 years old, in the year 1514, at that time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu decided to visit Vrindavan, and he stopped in Ramakeli to visit these brothers on the way. And so he camped on the outskirts of Ramakeli, and the brothers Rupa and Snatan heard that he had come, and they were already quite knowledgeable about him, and they had been corresponding with him. They had explained their situation. We're stuck, you know, working for the Nawab. This is not very favorable for our Krishna consciousness. What should we do? Lord Chaitanya wrote back some kind of esoteric coded meaning in a letter, basically saying that one should just wait and surrender and depend on the Lord. He'll take care of everything. So the Mahaprabhu was with his associates outside of the city, and so Rupa and Sanatan, they decided to sneak out of the royal palace in the middle of the night in regular garb and go and visit them. No doubt, if the people knew that they were going to go and do this, it would have caused a great controversy. So you can imagine, you know, if some the President of the United States, you know, suddenly became a Hare Krishna, or he wanted to visit the Washington Temple or in Potomac or something like this, and then he would have to sneak out of the White House and go incognito. So Rupa and Sanatan had to sneak out, and they approached the entourage of Sri Chaitanya and offered their obeisances from afar with grass in between their teeth. And then as they approached him, they began to pray. Rupa Goswami, in great humility, with tears in his eyes, said that we are from the lowest family. We have the lowest birth. And not only that, we're working for people who are of such low caste. So we feel embarrassed even to present ourselves before you, because you're so pure and we're so wretched. But we've heard that you are Patita Pavan, you're the savior of the fallen. So please consider that you'll not find anyone as fallen as us. And they fell at his feet, grabbing his feet, and they were praying in this way, with straw between their teeth. So then Mahaprabhu was very deeply moved by their deep expression of humility. And so he said that you brothers are my eternal servants. And from now on, you'll be known as Sri Rupa, Sri Sanatan, and Anupama. And so he gave them these names. He placed his hands on their heads, and then he gave them these names. And then he said, do not worry about your present engagement. I'm sure that, he said, go home and don't worry about this. I'm sure that very soon Krishna will give his mercy to you and you'll be free of this engagement working for the Nawab. So then they were very satisfied that they had connected with Mahaprabhu. And but they also knew that he was planning to go to Vrindavan. And they were afraid for his well-being because they thought that it's quite possible that the Nawab has so many spies. There's a good chance that he knows that you're here and that he could, and he probably would give you some great difficulty on the way. So better not to go to Vrindavan. But Mahaprabhu wasn't moved by this proposal. He said, oh, who is this Nawab? Just an insect. So then they reconsidered and they made another proposal. And then they thought, well, my dear Lord, it's not our position to give you advice. And we may be wrong about this, but very humbly they presented. Then, as far as we understand, it's not the proper etiquette for a sannyasi to approach the holy Dhamma Vrindavan with such a huge retinue, entourage of followers. But one should approach Vrindavan as a beggar, as a mendicant, like this, not like with so much followers and like this. So then Mahaprabhu considered and he thought, yes, this is true, actually. And so he went back to Puri. So their second proposal worked. And then they began working during their duties for the Nawab. And then gradually they became somewhat disgusted, obviously, working in this way. And they all tried to get away from the situation. Rupa and Anupama had somehow escaped. And they ended up going to Prayag. But as most of you probably know, Sanatan was not able to get away so easy. And although he stopped coming to office, when he presented that he was ill, then Nawab sent a Kaviraj to check up on him. And the Kaviraj came into his home, and instead of seeing him laying in bed, he was having a big Bhagavat seminar in his house with so many pandits. And so he reported this to the Nawab, who came and arrested him. You know, and Sanatan said, well, what is the big thing? So many Hindus are becoming Muslims. If one Muslim becomes a Hindu, but he didn't accept this argument. He decided to throw him into jail. So he put him in jail. And you know how he kind of tricked the jailer and bribed him, told him that he would go to Mecca and become a Daravesh, a mendicant. And so don't worry, nobody will know, I will just disappear. You take all these gold coins. And then the jailer thought, yes, very good. He took the gold coins and he let Sanatan go. And Sanatan later met Mahaprabhu in Varanasi, in Kashi, who was at the house of Chandrasekhar. And there, Sanatan Goswami met Mahaprabhu and embraced him. He had a beard and he was wearing this fancy quilt. But in the meantime, before that happened, Mahaprabhu went back to Puri, and then after a very short time, his eagerness to go to Vrindavan drove him for a second time. So he went not with a big retinue, but just with one or two servants. And so he went to Vrindavan, went to all of the forests here in Vrindavan, and then gradually came back. On his way back, he stopped in Prayag, Allahabad, and there at the Dashashwamedha Ghat, he met Rupa and Anupama. And for 10 days, he instructed them in Krishna Tattva, Bhakti Tattva, and Rasa Tattva, or Sambandha, Avideya, and Prayojan Tattva. And then they all traveled to Varanasi. And then Mahaprabhu was planning to go to Puri. And then so Rupa and Anupama begged him, please allow us to go to Puri with you. And he said, no, I want you to go to Vrindavan first before you come to Puri. So first you go to Vrindavan, stay there for some time, get the mercy of Radha and Krishna, and then later you can come and meet me in Puri. So they agreed. They accepted his order on their head. They went to Vrindavan, and they did parikrama Vrindavan. And if, after a very short time, because of eagerness to be with Mahaprabhu, they left and they traveled again, walking all the way down to Puri. Of course, all this traveling is being done on foot. You know, there's no buses or trains that time. And on the way, Anupama passed away, which was quite tragic. And no doubt he was probably very young, because at that time Rupa Goswami was only about 26 years old. That means that he renounced his grihastha ashram at the age of 25. And so Vallabha, as far as I understand, was younger, or Anupama. So he was very young. He passed away. On the way, Rupa Goswami was writing a drama about Krishna Leela. And he stopped in a little village called Satyabhamapur to rest. And that night he had a dream. And in the dream, a goddess appeared to him, a beautiful goddess appeared to him, and she very sweetly and humbly said, "My dear Rupa, this play that you're writing about me, I want you to write two separate dramas. Write a separate drama about me." And then the dream broke and he woke up. He realized that this was Satyabhama Devi, the queen of Krishna, because he was in Satyabhamapur. And but then when he came to Puri, then he showed this drama to Mahaprabhu and to Srupa Damodar Goswami, and they also said the same thing: you should make two separate dramas, because to write about Dwarka Leela and Vrindavan Leela is rasabhas, it's very not good, so you should write two separate dramas. So he accepted that, and he accepted that as confirmation. So then Rupa stayed, Rupa and Sanatan, they stayed in Puri for 10 months at that time, and they received instructions from Mahaprabhu. And after 10 months was up, then Mahaprabhu ordered them to go to Vrindavan and to establish the headquarters of the Gaudiya Vaishnav religion. So he told them to do four things. One was to re-establish the holy places, the lost holy places where Krishna performs his pastimes. The second is to establish deities of the Lord. The third thing was to write bhakti shastras. And the fourth is to propagate the rules of devotional life. So with these very big responsibility, Rupa and Sanat went to Vrindavan. There was already Lokanath and Bhugarbha Goswamis here. They had come before. They had not been able to do very much. And Rupa and Sanatan also doubted their ability to do anything also. I mean, can you imagine coming here 500 years ago to establish the Gaudiya Vaishnav cult, and Vrindavan is just a big jungle, and there you are, and nobody's, what would you do? So Rupa was feeling the weight of this order. He was sitting by the Jamuna, contemplating this order and feeling the weight, the responsibility, and suddenly young village boy came walking up, and he said, "Hey, Baba, what are you doing? Why are you lamenting?" And he said, "Oh, I have such big responsibility. I don't know. Mahaprabhu wants me to establish so many deities and write books, and I have no knowledge. I have no shakti. How can I do all these things?" And he said, "Oh, that's easy. Follow me. I know where there's a deity. Come." And he brought him, Rupa Goswami, to this big hill. And he said, 5,000 years ago, he said, there was the deity of Govinda was established by Vajranaba, the great grandson of Krishna. But at a certain time, the Muslim invaders came, and so the villagers they dug into this hill and they put Govinda there. So if you dig him out, you'll get the deity. And he said, "How do I know there's a deity in this?" And then the boy said, "Well, every day there's one cow that comes, and he drops milk, and in this way Govinda is getting his daily offering. It seeps through the earth." And that was his evidence. Suddenly the boy disappeared. And Rupa was left wondering what to do. The next day he thought he would see if it was actually true. And lo and behold, cow came walking up on the hill and dropped milk went seeping into the ground. And then he thought, yes, it must be true. So then he gathered the Vrijabasis, the local villagers, and he told them, he requested them, "Please come, there's a deity inside of this hill." And Rupa Goswami was so effulgent and so beautiful and so pure looking that everyone, somehow he was able to actually convince them. And after some great effort of digging and digging and digging, finally they pulled the deity of Govinda out from the hill. And they established this deity here in Vrindavan. And later some businessman from Mathura gave money for the construction of the red sandstone temple that we see the remnants of now. So Rupa and Sanatan lived here in Vrindavan for many years. They did bhajan in different places. We know that Rupa Goswami has bhajan kutir in Terakadamba, a place in between Yavad and Nandagram, where Krishna would go and climb the trees and call his cows. So he would sit in this place. There's a picture of this place. I'm sure many of you have gone. You can pass that around. Very beautiful place. He sat there and wrote many books. You know, Sanatana Goswami also, he did bhajan by Manasa Ganga and so many places here in Braj. Usually they would stay by themselves, but often they would come together and just enjoy each other's association here and chant together, tell pastimes, discuss philosophy. Once Rupa and Sanatana were sitting together and they were telling each other some pastimes, and they were going on and on all day into the late afternoon. Suddenly Rupa decided, he realized that he hadn't offered any prasadam to his elder brother and esteemed spiritual master. So he at that time thought, "Oh, I should offer some prasad to my dear brother. I wish I had some prasad to offer him." So desiring in this way and getting again entangled in their conversation, then suddenly there was one beautiful young girl who came up to the kutir and offered some rice and milk and sugar to the brothers. She said, "My dear brothers, why are you not taking any prasad? You should take this and cook it and enjoy prasad." So Rupa and Rupa and Sanatana, they both looked at this beautiful girl and they were very much enchanted by her beauty. But they still were absorbed in their katha, so they continued discussing. So then she realized that they weren't going to cook, so she said, I'll do the cooking. So she just made a fire, had a pot, she cooked the milk and the rice, put the sugar in, and then she left it there for them. "See, anyway, here's, it's already cooked. Now I have to go. My mother's waiting for me." And so she left. So Rupa, he took this and he offered it to his brother. And Sanatan tasted some of this prasad, and he felt great ecstasy. So much his body started trembling, his hair stood on end, tears started flowing from his eyes, and he fell over in a faint. And then when he woke up, he asked, "What kind of prasadam is this? I've taken Mahaprabhu's prasadam in Puri, and this prasadam is even more powerful than that. What kind of prasadam did you give me?" He said, "I don't know, there was this girl that came and she offered this." And so he said, "Yes, I accepted it." Sanatan said, "But you were desiring something? In your mind you were thinking to, what were you thinking about?" And he said, "Yes, I thought that I should offer you some prasad." And then he said, "Oh, this was a very big mistake you made. Very big mistake, because that was Srimati Radharani. And now you have made our Ishta Devi serve us. This is terrible." And he chastised him. And he accepted the chastisement. But then they looked and they said, "Well, there's so much kheer here, and she came and made it for us, so we should honor it." So they started eating the kheer, and then as Rupa and Sanatan ate the kheer again the same thing happened. Both of them, they started trembling, and their hair stood up on end, and they felt ecstasy, and they just fainted. And then when they woke up moments later, then they again took some more of the kheer, and then again the same thing happened. And in this way they finished off the whole, into the evening, late into the evening, they finished off this sweet rice. And then later they took the clay pot and they broke it into small pieces and they kept that in their dhoti. And every time they took prasadam, they would eat a little piece of the pot and then they would get the same effect. You know, they would start trembling and they would faint. So, another time, Rupa Goswami was writing a book glorifying Srimati Radharani, and it was describing how her beauty of her bodily features, her lotus eyes like bumblebees, and her beautiful eyebrows like the more beautiful than the bow of Cupid, and that her nose like a sesame flower, and her lips are beautiful like the red bimba fruit, and so on and so forth. And then he described that her hair was very beautiful, black and glistening with a blue tint, because she's always thinking of Krishna, so that she has this blue tint in her hair, and that the hair is braided and rests upon her shoulder, and it looks like a black snake. So Sanatan read this and he thought, black snake. How could it be auspicious to compare Radhika's hair to a black snake? I mean, a snake is a very low creature, very envious creature. How can we compare our hair to a black snake? You think this is appropriate? It doesn't sound very good. And so Rupa, he accepted and said, "Yes, well, all right then, can you make some suggestion? Maybe I'll change it. Maybe we can... if you can think of some other, you know, metaphor or simile." So he thought, "All right, I'll think about it." In the meantime, he went to take his bath. And so he was bathing. And I believe this happened at Radhakund, if I'm not mistaken. And so he was bathing. And in the distance, he saw these children playing. There were young girls swinging, another girl on the swing, back and forth, back and forth. And he was drying himself off, he was watching his children play. And suddenly, crawling down the rope of this swing was a big black snake, and it came up behind the young girl and was ready to attack her. So he shouted, "Stop, stop! Watch out! Look, there's a snake!" And he ran towards them to warn them. And suddenly, the big tree and the swing and all of the girls, they just disappeared into thin air. So then he was startled and he thought, "Oh, what's this? What has happened?" he realized that this was also Srimati Radharani, manifesting her swing pastime with her manjaris and gopis before his very eyes. And then the snake was actually her hair. And so then he realized that this was her message to him. That, yes, it's true. My hair does look like a snake. Even you yourself thought it was a snake. And so he realized that his criticism of Rupa's book and his poetic metaphor was out of place. And so he felt very guilty and he offered his obeisances and begged for forgiveness. And of course, Rupa offered his dandavats to his brother Sanatan also. And so in this way, they stayed in Braj and wrote so many books. Rupa Goswami wrote Ujjvala Nilamani, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Vidagdha Madhava, Lalita Madhava, Stavavali, Stavamala, Govinda Virodavali, Uddhava Sandesh, and 100,000 shlokas worth of books. So many different books he wrote. Radha Krishna Gonadesh Deepika, Lagu Bhagavatamrita, Dana Keli Kamaudi, so many, 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 many books. These are just some of the major books that he wrote. Mathura Mahatmya. After Rupa Goswami established the Govinda deity and began writing books, when the village people saw that actually there was a deity in the hill, then they accepted that he was a mystic, that he was a great sadhu, Mahabhagavat, and so they all were willing to do whatever he asked. And so he had so much support now. So he wrote a letter to Mahaprabhu in Puri at that time and asked for more help. So Mahaprabhu sent Kashishwar Pandit and a group of other Vaishnavas to Vrindavan to assist him in establishing the Gaudiya Vaishnav cult. And so now, in his later days, Mahaprabhu stayed in Puri and he was experiencing great separation from Radha and Krishna. In the mood of Srimati Radharani, he was feeling separation from Krishna in particular. And he stayed at the Gambira. And as you know, he would stay up all night chanting, rubbing his face against the walls, escaping from the Gambira, running out and diving into the ocean, or being found near the Puri temple, near the Jagannath temple, in a field with cows, like in a form like a tortoise. All of his limbs would retract within his body. Or sometimes once he was caught by a fisherman as he was floating through the waves of the ocean. His devotees, Govinda and Sarup Damodar and Shankar Pandit and Ramananda Roy and so many other Vaishnavas, they were always trying to protect him and make sure that he didn't hurt himself in his divine madness. As Mahaprabhu stayed in Puri, Ramananda Roy and Sarup Damodar, they would sing and recite poetry to him facilitate his moods of love. And when he roamed around Jagannath Puri, when he saw the sand dunes there on the beach, they reminded him of Govardhan Hill. And when he saw the ocean, it reminded him of the Jamuna. And when he saw the gardens in Puri, then he was reminded of the Nikunjas and groves of Vrindavan. So everywhere he went, stimuli for bhava bhakti or prema bhakti was manifesting within his heart. And so he would swoon in ecstasy practically every moment. And Srupa Dharmadhara and Ramananda Roy would often recite to them, recite these poems to him to appease his moods of love. And on one such occasion, when he was on the beach, he was feeling great ecstasy, and he began crying bitterly in the mood of separation of Srimati Radharani. And at that time, in a half-conscious state of mind, he spoke some instructions. And Rupa Goswami, at that time, he wrote down these instructions in verse form. And that's what we have as the Upadeshamrita. The Upadeshamrita is actually instructions of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that Rupa Goswami heard, and he summarized in verse form. So these, while he was in this half-conscious state. So actually, as we're saying, Rupa Goswami is more like a extension, in one sense, of Mahaprabhu, his literary extension. So he wrote these verses down, which summarize the teachings of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. These are the essence of our teachings. And all sadhaka, these instructions are absolutely necessary for all sadhakas to follow. As Prabhupada says here in this preface, that this is our guidebook. It's like it's a map to help us progress on the path of bhakti. And getting back to the preface now, Prabhupada mentions that, referring to the first verse, in all spiritual affairs, one's first duty is to control his mind and senses. Unless one controls his mind and senses, one cannot make any advancement in spiritual life. Everyone within this material world is engrossed in the modes of passion and ignorance. One must promote himself to the platform of goodness, sattva guna, by following the instruction of the follower. A follower of the Krishna consciousness movement should become a perfect Goswami. Vaishnavas are generally known as Goswamis. In Vrindavan, this is the title by which the director of each temple is known. One who wants to become a perfect devotee of Krishna must become a Goswami. Go means the senses, and Swami means the master. Unless one controls his senses and mind, one cannot become a Goswami. To achieve the higher success in life by becoming a Goswami and then a pure devotee of the Lord, one must follow the instructions known as Upadeshamrita, which have been given by Srila Rupa Goswami. Srila Rupa Goswami has given many other books, such as Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Vidagdha Madhava, Lalita Madhava. But Upadeshamrita constitutes the first instructions for neophyte devotees. One should follow these instructions very strictly. Then it will be easier to make one's life successful. Hare Krishna.
Srila Prabhupada also has given his commentary. And there's another, Radha Raman Goswami has written also a commentary on this book. So this book is actually considered very significant. So, can I talk in one note? He categorized the verses in the following way. The first, these are the symptoms of a self-controlled Madhyam Adhikari. Particularly, he mentions Tridandi Goswami Lakshana, or the symptoms of a Tridandi Goswami who's acting as a Madhyam Adhikari. Because someone who can control all of the senses, that means he's a Goswami, as Prabhupada was describing in the preface. So it seemed to me that the major thrust of the book is towards the Madhyam Adhikari, either to promote and to lift us to this platform, are to also instruct those who are already on this platform, directed towards the Madhya Madhikara. And here, verses 2, 3, and 4 are given his external behavior and devotional niyamas, which means rules and regulations. Like, be enthusiastic, be patient, be confident, etc. Associate with the Vaishnavas according to the six loving exchanges. Right. And avoiding the pratikul or the unfavorable items such as prajalpa, etc., which is in the second. So his external behavior and his devotional practices or devotional regulations, niyamas. Then this is the kind of middle section of the book. His internal development and vision. Then these are successive order of worshipable places and persons. The number 11, the highest glory of the entire universe. So these are English paraphrases for his Bengali titles. And he says something about each verse, kind of his, other than his commentary, his notes. So this gives us a good vision of the book. Has everybody got this down now? Yeah, because I can erase this for something. This is not from his commentary, as far as I know. These are just from some notes that he wrote on this about this book. I think I'll leave it at that. I mean, I'll give more details for each verse as we go along. And I will describe the different stages of bhakti that they represent as we do each verse. I think that will be better at this point. So are there any questions or comments?
Puri.
Yeah, Jagannath Puri. I don't know what is the year. Were they? Oh, what is their... Rupa Goswami is Rupa Manjari and Sanatan Goswami is Lavanga Manjari. So, Rupa Goswami... Rupa Manjari is prominent, has a prominent position of the Manjaris. So she is very, very close to Lalita Devi and Srimati Radharani. So therefore he's quite competent to write on these topics, lofty topics of rasa and Krishna Lila. Of course all the Goswamis, they're all Manjaris. Jiva Goswami is Vilas Manjari and Gopal Bhatta Goswami is Guna Manjari and Raghunath Das Goswami is Tulsi Manjari, and they're all Manjaris. So they're all, you know, they're all able to write on these topics. So Rupa and Raghunath, they hold a prominent position as far as Raghunuga Bhajan is concerned, and Jiva Goswami holds a prominent position as far as philosophy and presenting the philosophy in terms of logic and argument and like this. And Rupa Goswami presented the aesthetic aspects of our religion based upon Bharat Muni's Natya Shastra. So they had some different functions, but they all wrote very much. Jiva Goswami wrote the most. Well, it's the first four verses are introductory, and they're giving. Yeah, well, see, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he presents it in this way. Well, he says the first verse is describing the symptoms of the Tridandi Goswami acting in the Madhyam level. That means he's controlled his senses. And sense control is the first thing that one practices in spiritual life. Then the other things are like fundamental. And they also represent Shraddha and Sadhu Sangha. So, and Shraddha and Sadhu Sangha are bhajana, Kanishta Adhikari level. But anyway, because there's many different ways to look at something, that's why I said it seems that the main thrust of this book is directed towards Madhyam Adhikari devotees to bring you to the Madhyam stage. And Prabhupada stressed that. He said, we should not stay on the third class platform. We should come to the Madhyam, the second class platform. And this was his hopes, and his emphasis was like that in writing this book. Okay, so thank you. We'll have another class tomorrow at 3:00. Hare Krishna.